Nick DiGilio here. Hi. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. You can also send your texts to 312-981-7200. And you can check us out on Twitter. But the best way to stay connected is Facebook.com/NickDShow. Like us on Facebook. So there you go. My guest here is the author of a really fascinating book called Gentlemen Bootleggers. It's the true story of Templeton Rye, Prohibition, and a small town in cahoots. It's a really fascinating story about this small town in Iowa that continued to make rye and whiskey during Prohibition and worked together as a town to continue to do so. And it's interesting because it sort of happens around the same time that Al Capone in this city was bootlegging and doing all kinds of stuff during Prohibition. And Bryce Bauer is the author of Gentlemen Bootleggers. And he's, by the way, going to be coming to Chicago for a couple of book signings on Thursday, September 25th. He'll be appearing at City Lit Books on Kedzie. And on Saturday, September 27th, he'll be appearing at the bar Scofflaw, which is at 3201 West Armitage. His website is brycetbauer.com for more information, but we have a link there. And let's welcome Bryce to the show. Bryce, welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Let's get a little background on you. You are from Iowa.
Yes, born and raised in a small town called Audubon, which is just about 15 miles south of Templeton, where the book is set.
Now, did you know, when you were growing up, did you know about this story, this history?
Yeah, I heard some about it. A couple of, you know, just good family friends of ours who we like hunt with knew all of the history and would talk about it when we'd get together. But they mostly talked about the anecdotes of running whiskey or some of the antics that the whiskey cookers got into. They never got into the detailed history.
But there was a buzz about it, though, when you were growing up.
Oh, yeah, there was a big buzz, and still really, you know, you were a cool person if you could get your hands on some of the real bootleg. That was a good sign that you were sophisticated.
I love the title. Was that sort of did the title come to you right away?
You know, remarkably, it did, and I'm terrible at naming titles. I always joke that I have the worst titles in the world, and I expected this one to get, you know, thrown away as soon as they started designing the cover for the book. But they responded to it and they liked it, and I think it does capture the idea that these weren't. You mentioned Al Capone in the intro, and, you know, these weren't guys who were murderous. They were very upstanding, which was kind of remarkable.
Yeah, it really is an unusual story, and I love the fact that you do parallel it with Capone. They were just 11 months apart. The main kingpin in Templeton was a guy named Joel Urlbeck. And he was only 11 months difference in age with Capone, except how they were doing their bootlegging was completely different, correct?
Yeah, exactly. You know, 11 months difference. They were both amazingly young men. It's kind of, you know, a surprising thing. But of course, Capone created this just monster empire in Chicago that, you know, had its tentacles in everything and really ruled by intimidation and violence. And Urlbeck's operation, it also, you know, was very, very widespread for the tiny community that it was in. But he ruled more. He didn't really have to rule the community. You know, it was something that was mutually beneficial to everybody. So they all kind of opted in and willingly helped along with his bootlegging operation.
Mm. Well, let's talk a little bit about the area in which this story takes place. You know, right at the front of your book, you have a map that's included that shows you where, you know, the towns are that were involved in this story. Talk a little bit about Templeton. Tell us a little background on that town.
Yeah, Templeton is this town of about, you know, during Prohibition, it was about 428 people. Tiny town founded when the railroad came through the western part of Iowa in the late 19th century. And a couple of things that were remarkable about Templeton was that it was settled by people, nearly all of them, who had a German heritage, and in fact a German Catholic heritage. So from the very beginning, Templeton was one of those, you know, we think about those remarkable, tight-knit Western communities, and Templeton was kind of the alpha of those communities. It was really tight-knit and really brought together on the shared German-American heritage. And it was also a very successful farming community when it first started. The land around there is remarkably rich.
And what's it like now?
It's, you know, really, it's much the same. I think they have, you know, slightly fewer people, although we just had a premiere of the related documentary, Whiskey Cookers, in the town. I was talking with the mayor, and he was telling me that, you know, their population is starting to edge up again. But there's still, you know, it's still the same German families. They all still go to the Catholic Church. You know, you tell one person in the community something, and the word gets around everywhere, you know, instantly. It's still that very tight-knit community, and still a very successful community.
And when Prohibition hit, tell me how that Joel Erlbach's operation, how did it start?
Yeah, so Joe Erlbach, at the start of Prohibition, the farmhand, he had just kind of left his father's farm and started working for another farmer. And farmhands were really poorly paid. It wasn't something that you got room and board and, you know, maybe a dollar a day. And Joe Erlbach liked to drink, as many young men at the time did. And when Prohibition started, the price of alcohol skyrocketed, more than a farmhand could afford at that time. So when he kind of realized this, he started to, you know, experiment with how to distill alcohol. And in fact, somebody said that he used to claim that he learned how originally out of a catalog from the Sears Roebuck, which also sold stills. But he experimented along with that, and a lot of other people in the community were also kind of experimenting. But he was the one that figured out that if he kind of vertically integrated the operation and partnered with all these neighboring farmers, he would be able to grow an operation a lot larger than one still.
And but he had, how big was his operation at some point?
At one point, he claimed that he could produce 1,000 gallons of whiskey a day, which was, you know, that's quite a lot of booze. So it was pretty big by the height of, or toward the end of Prohibition, the last few years.
Mm. And what was it about the Templeton rye that was so special?
I've always thought, you know, there's a number of things. It really took on a reputation and a brand name for being something that was high quality. It was also, you know, a whiskey that was safe to drink. It had the reputation of being safe to drink. And during Prohibition, that was a really remarkable thing. There was a lot of, you know, alcohol out there that would just do terrible things to you if you consumed it. Mm. Unscrupulous bootleggers that didn't care what happened to their customers.
But this was the real deal. This was good stuff.
This was good stuff, exactly. And if you knew somebody and could get a bit of their really aged whiskey, it was really excellent. If you were some, you know, city yokel, they might give you something a little lower quality.
Yeah. But here is this small town that bands together and wants to do quality whiskey. Was that at the top of the list for Erlbach? Was he like, not only did he want to do it, but he wanted to do it well?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for one, he started out making this for himself to drink. So of course he wants, you know, everybody wants to drink the best whiskey.
Yeah.
Best whiskey they can. And so that kind of started out as his focus. And he was kind of the man, you know, his daughter was alive for most of the time we were working on the project. And we talked to her quite a bit about it. And she kind of said, but he was always one of those guys who if he's going to do something, he did it right. And he did it, you know, 100%. So he kind of took that to his whiskey making as well and really did focus on quality and experimented a lot with the recipe.
What did he do besides bootlegging? What was his profession? What was his background?
He was, during Prohibition, he was a full-time bootlegger.
Just a full-time bootlegger,
yeah. Yeah, he didn't have a cover story, you know. Everybody knew that he was wide enough open that everybody knew that he was a bootlegger.
Okay. And everybody, now, and so did it take a while for the town to get involved in the bootlegging and in covering things up and working together to keep this going? Did it take him, did he have to, like, really change minds or anything?
No, the town kind of jumped right in. Even before Erlbach really developed his big operation, by 1922 there was a large raid in the community, and it was one of the largest raids ever in Iowa, even later in Prohibition. And when the raiders came, found this tight-knit community, and they found the law enforcement officers at a couple of places from Templeton showed up to defend the bootleggers already, or, you know, they found evidence that a lot of bootleggers had already been tipped off. So the community just kind of jumped right in pretty quickly.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. And let's talk. I love the opening chapter where you do a parallel chapter about what's happening with Al Capone in Chicago and what's happening with Earl Beck in Iowa. Talk a little bit about their roads.
Yeah. So, you know, it was really remarkable that, A, they were born so close to each other. And then I opened that chapter. They both ended up in federal court on the same day. Joe Earl Beck had a grand jury hearing, and Al Capone was facing an indictment. And Earl Beck's experience, you know, he was sitting outside of the courtroom kind of eavesdropping into it, and he heard a number of witnesses from the community go up and defend him and commit perjury, basically, on the stand to go to bat for him.
Mm-hmm.
And Al Capone, you know, a lot of the press coverage around this court case in the early 30s was they were really looking forward to Al Capone's downfall. By that time, Al Capone had become associated with a lot of violence and a kind of a tarnished reputation for Chicago. So people were really looking for him to go away. But in Templeton, the community was still 100% behind Joe Earl Beck and really thought his operation was doing a lot of good and saving a number of farms that were struggling during the beginning of the Depression.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break, Bryce. Hang out. And the book is called Gentlemen Bootleggers. It's the true story of Templeton Rye, Prohibition, and a small town in cahoots. Really terrific read. Bryce, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right. Bryce T. Bauer is with us, and the book is great. It's called Gentlemen Bootleggers. More coming up on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. Hi. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we are here until 5 a.m., and then we'll hang out for the first hour of the Steve Cochran Show as well. And my guest right now is Bryce T. Bauer, who's the author of Gentlemen Bootleggers, The True Story of Templeton Rye, Prohibition, and a Small Town in Cahoots. Bryce is going to be coming to Chicago for a couple of book signings on Thursday, September 25th. He'll be at the City Lit Books on Kedzie. And on Saturday, September 27th, he'll be at the bar Scofflaw, which is on Armitage. And the book is terrific, and it tells a pretty fascinating story. And Bryce, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Who are some of your favorite characters that you discovered while writing this and doing research for this story?
Well, in addition to the bootleggers, there was, of course, the federal agents who, you know, were tasked with going after them. And especially around the country, a lot of these federal agents were, you know, pretty corrupt. It was a very low-paying job, and they got into it for one reason, and that was the bribes that all of the bootleggers were paying them.
Mm.
But there happened to be one of the Prohibition agents who grew up in the same town that I grew up in, actually, you know, maybe 10 miles from where I grew up, named Benjamin Frank Wilson. And he was a very, you know, earnest man. He didn't like law-breaking in really any kind of fashion. He first rose to prominence as a police officer, as the sheriff of Ottawa, who enforced license registration for cars, you know, a really, really kind of run-of-the-mill thing that no one cared that much about. But he joined the Prohibition Bureau and really went after alcohol and really gained this reputation of being a Prohibition agent who was really committed to the cause, but who also kind of did it in a way that was, you know, respectful and followed the law and didn't resort to entrapment or shakedowns, the bootleggers. So he was one of the most surprising characters that I discovered, especially because, you know, I had no idea that he came from my same community.
Yeah.
That was a nice attachment, even if he was on, I think, is the wrong side.
Right.
And then, you know, there's a number of other characters during Prohibition. There was, you know, Carrie Nation, who became famous for taking a hatchet and literally chopping up bars throughout America. And she was a wonderful character. And the ball player, Billy Sunday, who played for the Chicago White Stockings for quite a while.
Yeah.
before becoming, you know, one of the most famous evangelists. And
he is one of my favorite characters in the book, and you have a wonderful picture of him.
In the book.
What a great photo.
He really took, you know, a crazy antic style to his evangelism. It was really, and his rhetoric as well was really crazy and antic.
Yeah, it's great. It's really great. He's a really, really great character. So, Bryce, how long did it take you to write this? I mean, you know, this was something that you were interested in because you'd grown up in the area and heard about it. And so when did you, like, just chop down and start writing and getting it done? How long did it take you?
It took about three kind of full years. You know, a year and a half of that was kind of working on research that also went into the documentary. And then about another year and a half was mostly writing and a little bit of additional research. So I think 3 years of my life, I was thinking about Templeton High, you know, 24 hours a day.
Now, historically, Bryce, let's look back at Prohibition itself. It's looked back in a negative light. And even though it was a law, it was illegal to have booze, but most people think that Prohibition was not a good thing.
Yeah, and it really kind of seemed to have turned out very terribly. Herbert Hoover, who was a president for part of Prohibition and who also came from Iowa, you know, called it a noble experiment, far-reaching in motive, or an experiment noble in motive and far-reaching in purpose, which kind of captures this idea that, you know, people were trying to change the country for the better when they started Prohibition, but it didn't. You know, it created far more sins than it alleviated, especially in cities like Chicago, where you had, you know, warfare on the streets over this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, historically, you look back at it, and you're like, oh, why would? Because I mean, people would. It caused more harm than good. I mean, they were, you know, they were saying you shouldn't drink; it's bad. But ultimately, it became even worse.
Yeah. And of course, you know, it kind of forgets that people, you know, drinking is very pleasurable for a lot of people. It's something that people, you know, no surprise, like to do.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So now tell me about the documentary. It's called Whiskey Cookers, The Amazing Story of the Bootleggers of Templeton, Iowa. And it's a kind of companion piece to the book Gentlemen Bootleggers. Tell me a little bit about the movie.
Yeah, the documentary originally started they started this project as an oral history, collecting just interviews with a lot of the old timers who knew things, and that went all the way back to about 2005. But through that, we got to know a lot of people in the community, and the project's director, Dan Manette, really made some good connections in the community with a number of the old historians. Lambert and Elaine Schwaller were two really important ones. And they contributed a lot of research that, you know, showed that there was a lot of documentation and historical records for this thing. So that kind of overwhelmed us and gave us far more information than we could fit in the documentary. So that's when Dan encouraged me to start writing this book.
Well, it's a great book, Bryce. I really had a great time reading it.
And, yeah, well, thank you.
It's called Gentlemen Bootleggers. It's the true story of Templeton Rye, Prohibition, and a small town in cahoots. And it's a different kind of story than you're used to reading about bootlegging and Prohibition. It really has a totally different angle. Thursday, September 25th, you'll be here at City Lit Books, 2523 North Kedzie. Mm-hmm. And Saturday, September 27th, you will be at the bar Scofflaw at 3201 West Armitage. And your website is brycetbauer.com. But we have a link on our Facebook page if people want to check it out. Bryce, real pleasure talking to you. I think the book is great, and best of luck.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye. There he is, Bryce Bauer, the author of Gentlemen Bootleggers. Terrific book. All right, we'll take a quick break. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN.